Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Want to cut your heating costs this season? With a highly efficient York heating and air conditioning system, you can save up to 50% in energy costs while enjoying tax credits and TVA energy rate rebates as much as $3,000. Your local York dealer. Visit harbinair.com to schedule a free evaluation of your system.
This is Gerard Gibbert, and thank you for listening to Middays here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert is on the air. Middays with Gerard Gibbert is powered by CSpire. Power your home or business with CSpire fiber. To learn more, visit supertalk.fm/CSpire. CSpire fiber powers Super Talk Mississippi.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state. You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Midday Super Talk Mississippi. I'm your host, Gerard Gibbert, along with Will East in the Element Wealth Studio, guiding you through the middle of your day with facts, fodder, and fine music. Morning there, Will.
Boy, it felt little fallish this morning there, Gerard. I don't know how it was in your neck of the woods, but mine, I walked outside to take it because the trash runs at my place on Monday.
So me too.
I was running out there to get it out there in time, and I was like, ooh.
I know. Well, it teases you, right? It
always does. Yeah.
Don't get too comfortable and accustomed to this, because we probably got some more warmish weather at some point headed our way. And you know why? Because it's football season.
It's football season. And it's weird. I don't know about your house, but my house, the leaves just decided, you know what? It's fall. I'm dropping.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere now.
I agree. There's some species that do start dropping their leaves a little earlier than others. An example, I have some Sauchet magnolias in my yard, and these are not the typical sort of Japanese magnolias or the little Jim magnolias or the standard big southern magnolias. These have a different sort of big leaf on it. Almost looks like a big shamrock. They do bloom in the spring, pink and white flowers, a little stripe of pink in there. Then once they're bloomed, they push out the green, but big old leaves drop. They've already started, and that's typical. I remember that in years past. They get kind of cranked up, but they're among the first to come out, so
yeah,
they're on a little bit different schedule. Somebody needs to show them the calendar, I guess. But we're all buckled in, ready to go today. A whole bunch of stuff going on across the United States and, of course, the great state of Mississippi. Perhaps something that really shocked everybody over the weekend, really last night, was that Joe Max Higgins, the extremely successful director of the Link, that's the Economic Development Group in the Golden Triangle there, has just enjoyed tremendous success bringing in major investments into that area of Mississippi. He's out. We sort of found out through a press release there, it seems like, Will, and there's just a lot of questions about that.
A late Sunday press release, which was a little bit odd. Who? And Mr. Higgins had been on with us last week
when we did a show in West Point,
yeah,
for the West Point Growth Alliance, promoting a course coming up this Saturday, the Prairie Arts Festival. He was on with Richard.
Uh-huh.
And then a few weeks earlier than that, we did the Middays, hosted a remote for the new site, economic development site that the Link had secured in the Golden Triangle area up there, called Cinco, number 5. It's their fifth site, hence the name. And we did a show up there, and I had the pleasure of interviewing Joe Max as well. And that site, directly across the street from where we were,
yeah,
actually, which is right down the street from the Communiversity that East Mississippi Community College operates. I've bragged about that every time we're there. I believe it's a model for what education and workforce development should look like because it's a great collaboration between the private sector and the educational community. But this site's across the street from that. It would be on the north side there. And interviewed Joe Max. And then we find out that he's no longer with the Link, and there's no details, right? We don't know. I would submit, Will, that the press release or the statement really from the Link board suggests he was terminated. But we don't know that.
We don't know. What I can tell you is when I saw this last night, we've had some SuperTalk representatives reach out to him.
Okay.
And he said he would get back with us.
Okay.
This
all
week.
Right.
So that's all. That's where I'll leave it. But that's,
so that's all we know.
That's all we know so far.
Okay.
But yeah, it was, you know, I was shocked.
Yeah.
I can't, you know, it. This guy went on 60 Minutes talking about how great, you know, Mississippi is and all the incredible stuff. I mean, that didn't just happen. So yeah, I was taken aback by it.
And the only reason that I'm even making a statement that it sounds like at least that he was terminated, but we don't know, is because, and this is in our article, our news guys, thanks to them for getting on this as soon as the news hit the wire. And as you indicated, they reached out directly to Joe Max and said he'd get back to us. But they put together an article. Let's see, it was J.T. Mitchell, our news director, that took care of this for us on yesterday. Appreciate him for doing that. And so this was the statement, the press release, from the Link's executive committee. That's essentially their board. Said, quote, a leadership transition is in the best long-term interest of the organization and the region we serve. And just folks, I think, probably know this, Will. A statement like that, I promise, isn't going out without lawyers looking at it. They're going to be involved, the lawyers who advise the Link's executive committee, as is the case with any board that is responsible for governance and oversight of an organization. This is something that the lawyer's going to cobble together, the language and so forth. And doesn't that sound to you like maybe that it...
Yeah.
Unless it was just a mutual parting of the ways. That could be the case as well. So we don't know is the bottom line. And we're going to pass on anything we hear to you as soon as we hear it. But hopefully Joe Max will get back to our news team.
He says that he's going to do an interview on Mornings with Richard Cross later this week. That's what it's actually in the article. You can read it right there.
All right. Well, good.
I wasn't the only one surprised. Bill Cork,
from MDA.
Development Authority, he's, quote, I just found out today, like everyone else, and I'm totally surprised by it. I tried to reach out to Joe Max, but got no response. Cork said, this appears to be a local HR matter and decision by the Link Board. MDA works with various communities throughout.
Okay.
Through personnel transitions all the time. I personally wish Joe Max the best in his future endeavors and hope to hear from him soon.
Okay. Well, there you go. So something else that I heard. And again, I can't verify this, but I'll just pass on. But I did hear it from an elected official who's in the know that the Board of Supervisors wasn't aware. And of course, now, the Board of Link, the Executive Committee, as they call it, they're not required to gain approval from the Board of Supervisors on personnel decisions like this. They're independent. They get their funding from the Board of Supervisors, and that the Board of Supervisors found out online.
Wow.
So we'll see. Now, look, we got to point out Joe Max, incredibly successful, prolific economic developer, as you said, featured on 60 Minutes. I think because the 60 Minutes folks were a little astonished at the success he was enjoying in the Golden Triangle area of the state of Mississippi. And it's not surprising that especially left-leaning news media, 60 Minutes has certainly evolved into that. always kind of thumbs their nose at Mississippi, right? There's no surprise there. And just don't think we can punch at the same level that other larger states can, states you think about being more industrialized. You know what I always want to say to them? Without us, you guys don't eat. You need to keep that in mind. The clothes on your body and the food on your table is largely produced by the agricultural industry in the state of Mississippi, which is our largest. But there's no doubt, I'm a proponent of this. We need to diversify. We haven't held back on stating that here on this program. And Joe Max gets that, and he's, of course, was credited with largely responsible for bringing in the Steel Dynamics project. That was a huge thing a couple of years ago. PACCAR, Airbus, Yokohama Tire, all big projects for the Golden Triangle area, all creating lots of jobs, massive amount of investment. And you know what gets overlooked a lot, Will, is the construction dollars that flow, most of which to Mississippi companies, certainly a large part of it does. Same thing I'm witnessing at AWS. And yeah, people say, well, that's temporary. Man, it's still a bunch of money that has a long-term economic impact. In the case of AWS, temporary is in several years. We're coming right back with Jan Dawson, Director of the Substance Use and Prevention Division of the Mississippi Public Health Institute. Stay with us.
Sometimes an identity.
This segment of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by Covington County Hospital in Collins, where your health matters.
Now back to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
All right, well, I'm trying to get the house band to add a couple of Jackson Browne tunes to the lineup. We got 3 gigs coming up this fall, by the way, so I guess we didn't scare anybody off at the Neshoba County Fair. We're pleased to welcome now Jan Dawson, Director of the Substance Use and Prevention Division of the Mississippi Public Health Institute. Hey, Jan, thanks for coming in.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you got an event coming up this weekend, right?
We do. On Saturday, we will be in Natchez on the Bluff in partnership with the Natchez Farmers Market there, having a recovery celebration for people who are in recovery, but also honoring some folks that have not been so lucky as to make it to recovery.
Okay. Well, so why Natchez? Is there a relationship there?
There is a relationship there. We've been working for quite some time through some funding from the federal government with Natchez Youth Court and Natchez Drug Court, Adams County Drug Court, rather. And they have been developing something called a public health and safety team in their area through some of the work that we've done along with them. But we've also done some work with having a peer navigator in that area who actually meets people in the emergency department after an overdose and says, let me help you get to treatment.
Okay.
And so we have had tremendous success with that program, and we have developed some really good relationships in that community with everybody from public health individuals to public safety individuals and courts.
So, Jan, drug abuse, it is indifferent to whom it might attack, right?
Or it absolutely
it
is.
Doesn't really care of your socioeconomic status, your race, your gender, or any of the other personal attributes. But there's long been a stigma associated with even acknowledging, perhaps, that you have a problem so that you can seek help.
Absolutely. And that's part of the work that we're doing at Mississippi Public Health Institute, and that's why this kind of event is so important. That we do want people to understand that it doesn't matter who you are, how you raised your children, if you raised your children in church, or if you are a stellar member of the community. There are so many people that are hiding their abuse, their substance abuse. And we want to just shine a light on that and say, you know what, it's okay to not be okay. Let us support you through this. And that's why it's so important to have peer support specialists and have events like this where they actually see other people recover.
So do you feel like that the stigma is starting to diminish somewhat, that situation's improving? More people are saying, yeah, it's okay, it's no shame in me if I've got a problem, to getting help.
Well, we certainly hope so. We have done a great deal of work with the media, trying to promote that idea. We work with churches, and we've worked with a significant number of pastors in the state,
okay.
You know, promoting that within the churches, that it's okay to not only be a church member and depend on your faith, but also it's okay to go to counseling. It's okay to address your issue, and that's the wraparound. And then we want to also promote that with our law enforcement agents, with our emergency departments. We've worked with physicians. We've worked with law enforcement. We do a great deal of training with law enforcement in mental health first aid. And I think we've made tremendous progress in that area, but we have a long way to go too.
Okay. So it sounds like we're getting better at identifying the problem.
Absolutely.
What about treating the problem? Are we making some advances there?
We absolutely are. We just recently got the notification that the opioid settlement funds are available for people to write proposals in order to address this situation. We've been working with the AG's office to look at what kinds of projects should be available to people. And right now, that funding is wide open to a large number and variety of programs.
Okay. So the data that we received here says that according to the State Department of Health, 80,000 suspected drug overdoses since 23.
Yes.
2 years. 80,000? 3 years?
Now, what we are seeing right now in the state that we think is a positive is we're seeing our overdose deaths go down.
Okay.
The number of overdoses, however, is continuing to somewhat rise. We think that some of our success with the overdose deaths going down is obviously related to the naloxone distribution that we've done in the state.
Mm-hmm.
That it is still available. We'll be giving out naloxone at this event. But we do know we have a long way to go. And when you say those numbers, we're just now back at the point that we were when we said we have an opioid epidemic before the COVID pandemic. And then those numbers obviously went up during the pandemic period. So we're just now back at the point when the federal government said we have an epidemic in the United States. So we don't want anybody to think we've solved the problem, but we've made significant progress.
What can we as just average citizens, Joe Q Public, do?
Well, the first thing that you can do is try to help get rid of the stigma. It's okay to seek help, and we want people to be able to seek help. But also, have naloxone. You never know when you're going to be in a position. There are so many ways now to get naloxone. You can contact your community mental health center. You can go online at odfree.org and request a kit, and it'll be mailed directly to your home with very little information that you have to provide. And then, of course, anytime you can call the Mississippi Public Health Institute, and we will provide those kits. We're right now putting wall units out in several different places, mostly public buildings like drug courts and those kinds of things, but also in schools so that people can grab it and run with it. But also, we had the opportunity just recently to launch our very first naloxone vending machine at Jackson Medical Mall. And in the first month after that vending machine was installed, we had 664 doses of naloxone distributed from that one machine.
Mm.
So we're working now with some other federal partners that we have, other nonprofits that are trying to help us put machines in other parts of the state as well. And then we're also working with the Department of Mental Health, and we're going to be able to place a machine very soon in the Hattiesburg area.
So where do you receive your funding?
Everything that we do at MSPHI is grant-funded.
Okay.
We work entirely off soft money. We have federal funding. We have funding from several different state agencies, including the Department of Mental Health and the Department of Health. We also work closely with our law enforcement agents, although we don't have direct funding necessarily from them. We also have nonprofit partners that we work with across the United States.
Okay. And so are there peer organizations in the other states that focus on this issue as well?
Absolutely. The vending machine model that we have came from Nashville, and we've worked very closely with several organizations there. And then we've worked with Fund Recovery, which is a national organization but housed in Tennessee. And we've also worked with Reach Impact, which is also a nonprofit that works in this space.
I know this problem is certainly not unique to any age, but it's especially concerning when a young person has their life upended because they got involved in drug abuse. How are we doing there?
So, you know, we when we look at the statistics, we obviously have not beaten the problem because now substances that such as fentanyl can show up in a lot of different places. Never take a drug that you did not get from the pharmacy. Nothing hand-to-hand these days. I will say this. Our opioid overdoses seem to target our individuals that are either from the late 40s into the early 60s. That seems to be the largest group. But mm-hmm. They're also the folks that probably had the most pain during the opioid crisis when it was being prescribed. And then once we kind of locked down on some of those opioid prescriptions, you know, a lot of people still had chronic pain and went to the streets without going to pain management. The best option for people who do have chronic pain is a pain management specialist.
Before we go here, got a little time left. Are there any laws or regulations or policies you'd like to see implemented at the state or federal level to address this issue?
Well, there are always things that we think we need to move, you know, because always things are being addressed and we have new issues come up. But I will say this. I want people to understand, especially in the state of Mississippi, that if you have naloxone, don't hesitate to give it. You are covered under the Good Samaritan law. If it doesn't work, if that's not what the issue is, it's not going to hurt that individual. Hmm. So, and if it does help them, then you've just saved a life. So the best thing you can do is have a kit like this, and you can. And if you need information about how to get one, you can go to odfree.org and find all that information.
About 30 seconds. How important is it that someone who is involved with drug abuse have a relationship or have a dialogue with someone who has beat it?
Oh, absolutely. Empathy. We have peer support specialists all over the state, and we can connect you to anyone in any area.
Chan Dawson, Director of the Substance Use and Prevention Division of the Mississippi Public Health Institute, has been our guest. Thanks for coming on, Jan. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
You bet. Folks, we're stepping aside right now. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio. It's Brian Pete, Director of Riley County Police Department at 11:05. All right. How was that?
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert, here on Super Talk Mississippi.
I believe the original LP, the song consumed an entire side or pretty close to it.
Yeah, something like
right?
that.
Oh, my gosh. Just went on and on and on. Have no idea what it's about, by the way.
Now, look, I love interesting band names, but I got to say, that's one of the worst band names.
That's back when it was just kind of in vogue to make up bad band names.
I guess so. Yes has to be the worst band name.
Speaking of words, the liberal think tank called Third Way, they have now determined that many of the words that they recommended Democrats use turned out to have branded them as rather toxic across the country, that they're a bit extreme. And so they're having a sort of a change of heart about the vernacular that they're using to support their political aspirations. Privilege, that's one, of course, been used quite a bit. How about triggering? Microaggression, systems of oppression, cultural appropriation. This is one you hear over and over again. Existential threat.
Existential threat.
How about the unhoused person who immigrated? We can't call them illegal aliens. Birthing person. What was the word or the terms they use for people that are locked up in jail? They got
incarcerated people.
Okay. Temporarily detained or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Unhoused was
yeah.
another one.
Oh, my gosh. Birthing person.
The problem they have, though, is that it's not just the politicians that they have to worry about using these terms. It's a lot of times it's the academics.
That's true.
It's celebrities. It's, you know, influencers on the left. And they're so associated with the Democratic Party that they kind of get conflated. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of this stuff originated in academia. That's what they do. You know, they sit around and think about things like this rather than doing something productive.
I mean, the page one of the DNC national platform last year, I think it was page one, was, you know, they put out this big pamphlet, you know, with all this information about, you know, what they're going to, their policy positions at the Democratic National Convention
yeah.
every year.
The their
page
platform.
One,
yeah.
Page one was land acknowledgement. We first recognized that this land is not ours.
Oh, now you've reminded me of. Right when all this craziness started, this DEI, this wokeness and CRT and systems of oppression, when it was just invading corporate boardrooms, and they were, of course, were directing management to really include and incorporate all that messaging. Well, during the COVID era, I remember vividly, Microsoft had mm-hmm. a big event. I think it was their security event, and it was a global event that, rather than doing in person, of course, they were doing through their Microsoft Teams web conferencing app. And the host, the MC, if you will, there were a couple of them on different sides of the pond here, starts out by doing exactly what you were talking about, acknowledging that the land
yeah.
that building sat on belonged to some tribe of Indians that I've never even heard of before. And they were so, it's what makes me laugh about it, as I always say, because they're so serious about it. And it's like, I'm pretty sure all the land before we got here belonged to somebody else. But they had to point that out. And then she described her physical appearance, I mean, down to the clothes she was wearing. And maybe that's for people who are blind, possibly, tuning in. I don't know exactly, but spent a lot of time. I just remember the guy in Australia, he comes on, and I've got on khaki pants with his Australian accent.
Yeah.
And I have a blonde beard, he said, like, can't we just talk about cybersecurity? Nobody cares what you look like or that the land that the conference is being conducted on sits on some property owned by some ancient Indian tribe.
Why do they? I mean, the Native Americans took it from somebody, right?
Well, exactly, right.
What? Let's go back to the Neanderthals. Let's acknowledge that the Neanderthals at one point had this property.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
You'd
the mastodons
be,
before that.
Well,
right?
the whole conference would be apologizing.
Yeah. Yeah. This land was once occupied by Tyrannosaurus rexes. We know that they were there. Before that, it was
that's right.
You know, some amoebas
oh,
or something.
So now this third way. A company, organization that's advising the Democrats says, quote, we are doing our best to get Democrats to talk like normal people. Good luck on that, pal. Man, oh, man.
Well, they just don't have an authentic message. It's not just the messaging, but it's also the message and the thoughts behind them. They just don't, for the most part, not, again, a lot of this pertains to national politicians. Not, you know, sometimes at the local level it's different, but and a lot of times it is.
Yeah.
But like Gavin Newsom, that whole thing that he's doing right now where he's imitating Trump on Twitter or wherever, it's just not authentic.
Well,
when Trump does that, that's him.
That's his personality.
That's
right.
His personality, and that's, again, the issue is they have no personality. They're the most bland people that you could possibly get. And again, I go back to this, Gerard. I'll say it to the day I die. Nowadays, the politicians on the left leaning, you know, Democrats, yeah. Some independents, they're not brought up through the media ranks of getting beat up.
Yeah, I agree with that.
They can't take a punch. They can't counterpunch. Bill Maher said this the other day on his show. He said, look, the Republicans come on here a lot of times, Ted Cruz, others. He says, and I pummel them. I whip up on them, okay? But they're coming on my show. He says, I would love to have AOC come on my show.
Sure.
I would love to have some of these others come on my show. He says, but they won't.
Yeah, they won't.
They've been so mollycoddled. They've been so brought up in softball questions from people that think like them that they're not accustomed to. And you see it in the national media. Whenever a national media person throws a punch at them, doesn't throw them a softball, they don't know how to respond.
They'll only go into friendly territory. They won't accept an interview into an environment where they might get asked not just necessarily hard, I wouldn't even say combative questions, but how about questions that would require them to explain and elaborate on their positions? They can't. They just want to hear, yeah, that's great. That's what we want to do.
And what happens a lot of times is when they do go on these programs, 60 Minutes, I'm looking at you, they edit.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So you don't get the full story.
You don't get the full – I mean, that was the whole deal with that 60 Minutes interview was – Kamala Harris went on there, and she gave a rambling answer.
Right.
And they did a promo of her giving this rambling answer, but when they showed the actual program, they had cut it down. Now, they said it was for time purposes, but I don't think that really held up to the smell test. Her answer was much more concise, much more coherent versus what she actually said. Now, if they had released a transcript of it, this wouldn't have been a big issue, but they refused to do that because they knew it was a rambling answer.
So, right. It goes back to, in my view, what's happened in media in this country in general, is that the lines between objective news and opinion have been blurred.
Absolutely.
Here, for example, this show is an opinion show. Our news department, on the other hand, just reports the news. So an example is what we just did this morning. Our news department reported on the separation of Joe Max Higgins from the link. Well, I offer an opinion just based on reading between the lines. That was all. That's not found in our news article. That's the way it should be. News opinion. But if you look at CNN, MSNBC, look, we have to be honest, even Fox, those on the right a little bit, they infuse opinion into news.
Yeah.
But it's also fair to say that those outfits are more opinion and sort of built around opinion than they are news. And I guess you have to rely on then the traditional mainstream media, the television networks and newspapers, but they've all gotten tainted. They've all got skewed into one direction or another, I would say. And then you got this redistricting deal going on. What a firestorm that's created. Of course, that has prompted, as you were saying, Gavin Newsom to go out there, and it does look very phony. But the Republicans are just doling out a dose of the Democrats' own medicine here. I got some ideas of what I think we should do to kind of address this never-ending gerrymandering issue. But right now, we're stepping aside for a break. We're coming right back in the Element Well studio.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Middays from the Element Well Studio. Are you thinking about or planning for retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income, growth, and guarantees. Don't forget, as always, the C Spire text line is wide open, 601-879-4395. Boy, the Sports Talk team has been all over the place, man. They are in demand. Sports Talk Mississippi is going to be in Senatobia this afternoon for Meet the Rangers Day at Northwest Community College. The Rangers 2025 football season will kick off soon with high expectations once again. Plus, you'll hear about all the incredible things happening at Northwest Community College. We're so blessed, Will, to have a fantastic community college environment here in the state of Mississippi. 16 community colleges across our state. They're all great. And I may be a little biased, I guess, but I'm going to say it's the best community college system in the country.
Absolutely.
In the country. Not only do they excel at athletics, but in academics as well, preparing our young folks for careers of the future. Always good experiences had by those that attend Northwest Community College. Certainly no exception there. So lots of controversy over the last few days about this redistricting, this gerrymandering, as it is referred to, in Texas. Now California says it will follow suit and counter Texas, who believes through their redistricting can add 5 seats for the GOP in the U.S. House. And then you got Illinois talking about chopping up that state again. My gosh, they're already chopped up. The Democrats have been doing this. The Republicans have been doing this. And it's just a tit-for-tat scenario. But right now, Republicans own the state legislatures where this the district drawing occurs, and that includes in Texas. So they're trying to take some advantage of that. And you could look at some of the deep blue states. Massachusetts, I think, is one, for example, that has Republicans in it, but they're underrepresented. Speaking of underrepresented communities, underserved communities, a favorite term of the left. Well, that very perfectly applies to the representation from some of these deep blue states of conservative Republicans in those states that don't have any.
Yeah,
for the most part. So I get it. Now, I had an idea thinking about this, and I've said this many times on the program, that perhaps there's so much invested. I mean, financially, people cycles, courts, judges, you name it, legislatures, in consultants in this redistricting or districting. What that always says to me is that maybe we've conferred too much power to a House seat or control of the House or the Senate or even the White House in that respect. Maybe it's just too much power. When you look at the money being spent on some of these campaigns, $150 million for a Senate seat, that just tells me that that seat's just too valuable because it has too much power. I don't think that was the founders' vision. It was go away for a while and take care of the people's business and then get back to the farm. And in the meantime, your neighbors take care of your family. Man, have we ever drifted away from that or what? When you see these folks that have been in Congress 30, 40, 50 years, enriching themselves often and just continue to run. It just feels like there's too much power that's been vested in these congressional seats. It wasn't supposed to be like that. Maybe this is a suggestion I made on my social media. Maybe we ought to consider just using a random number generator. Just figure out the latitudinal and longitudinal boundaries and make sure that creates a district that has the appropriate number of constituents in it. What's 720,000, I think, per House seat. That's the way our Constitution says it. We do a census, and then we divide that by 720,000 and say, okay, this is how many districts we're supposed to have. And that's figured out per state. That's why we lost one not so long ago, 20 years or so ago. So we went from 5 to 4. But maybe we just ought to say, hey, RNG, random number generator. That's the way lotteries work, by the way. Just randomly figure out where that ought to be and make sure it comes up with 720,000, and boom, here's your map. But what happens is people squawk and say, oh, they don't have enough this race in it or that race in it, or it moves around this person's house or that kind of stuff. Well, that's crazy. It's not supposed to be that way. Just make it so that it's just indifferent and doesn't matter. Just as a thought at this point. Now, I know current dynamics, the current dilemma would suggest the Republicans need to take advantage of their control in the red states and redistrict in their favor. I support that. But long term, this is just going to continue. And it's
that pendulum will swing the other way.
That's right. I don't think this is what the founders envisioned. I really don't. Sports Talk Mississippi, they're going to be in Oxford at the College Corner off Sisk Avenue in the Oxford Commons on Thursday. Get all your game day gear for the kickoff of the college football season, plus great deals throughout the store. Your home for all the Rebel gear is at College Corner in Oxford. We're stepping aside for Fox News Super Talk News. Coming right back.
Your home of Middays with Gerard Gibbert is brought to you by the Mississippi Business Journal. Visit msbusinessjournal.com. Scott Coopwood, publisher and president.
Get ready to go beyond the headlines and join a meaningful conversation with people from around the state.
Hello.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard Gibbert here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's hour two of Middays. This is a Monday, so we have a short show for you today. Ricky Matthews, Super Talk Outdoors. That broadcast will occur starting at 12:05 today. So, on the C Spire text line, Ben from Madison says, I really don't like this Intel deal where government will receive a 10% stake in the company. Talk about seizing the means of production. Pleasantly surprised to see so many conservatives push back on the idea. I got to tell you, Ben, I'm not a fan of it either, and was somewhat disturbed when I found out that the federal government would, in fact, receive a 10% stake in chipmaker Intel. The president says that the taxpayers aren't paying anything for that directly. They are indirectly, and I mean that in that we're not actually tendering money, funds, to receive the stock. It's being granted to the taxpayers, to the federal government, because we provided them federal grants. And that was through the CHIPS Act. And you guys may remember that when the CHIPS Act was enacted in 2022, which provided grants or grant opportunities to chip makers in this country. It was championed by the Democrats, Joe Biden. Unfortunately, it was also supported by 17 Republicans, and that included Mississippi's Roger Wicker, Senator Roger Wicker. He supported that legislation. I was critical of that vote. I thought that was a bad move on the part of Republicans to join in Democrats. This is corporate welfare on steroids. This is just writing checks to these chip makers. And there was all sorts of conditions, DEI crap and stuff attached to it as well. Of course, everything that was done by Joe Biden and the Democrats had to include that component, right? And so I was upset with, I think it amounted to about $300 billion over a period of time. I may be a little high there, but it doesn't really matter. I thought that was bad. And so I don't fault the president for saying, hey, you know what, in exchange for us giving you these grants, you need to give us something back. How about a stake in the company? I get the rationale for it. It's a quid pro quo. It's deal making 101. Now, AMD and NVIDIA are also going to pay the federal government 15% of their sales to China just for the privilege of policy allowing them to sell their second-tier level of chips from China. So let me send this text real quick. Okay, so we have a plan. Will, I'll share with you in a minute. So,
okay.
Next segment.
But isn't this kind of similar to what they did with TARP, where the government took a stake in financial companies in the wake of the Great Recession?
Yeah, the crash, the financial crash of 2008. So that was called the Trouble Asset Relief Program, and that's because banks were sitting on all these toxic assets, these worthless, valueless assets, and were also held in their on their balance sheet what are called credit default swaps, CDSs, which are essentially insurance against a default by a debtor. So I loan money to a homeowner in the prime lending era, knowing this was a bad loan to start with a high probability of them defaulting. I'm going to insure against that default, and there were so many defaults, it took the insurance companies down.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and that's what precipitated the ensuing crash. But you're right. So the federal government, it did two things. One is it provided funds under TARP to these financial institutions. And by the way, whether they wanted it or not,
They were forced to take it.
We had several customers. I remember it distinctly. One of them, Will, was Iberia Bank in Louisiana. The first. You can look it up. The first to repay when they were able to repay. They had to sit on it, forced to take it, didn't want it because it didn't affect every bank. But they accepted this money from the federal government, and they essentially just held it on their balance sheet in many cases. And the other thing that happened is we bought equity in GM, the car makers, to sort of repay the unions for their support of Barack Obama.
Because a lot of people don't know this, but GE also had, at the time, a financial division.
Yeah, GE Financial.
GE Financial, yeah. That got, I think,
a bunch
in trouble.
Of money.
They got money. They got caught up in all this. But if I recall, the government got preferred stock.
That's right. That's right.
And then sold that stock off later on for a healthy profit.
Well, not in GM, not in the car makers. Where they got remunerated with a profit was in the repayment with interest from the financial institution, which, by the way, you can look this up as well. Every dime of that has been repaid. It did produce a tidy profit for the taxpayers. We still have some stake, I believe, in the auto companies from the bailout. And nonetheless, I think most conservatives, and this is what Ben, I think, is pointing out from Madison here on the text line, would say, yeah, this kind of looks like socialism, like central planning.
Yeah.
Like, why is the government investing taxpayer money, sort of picking winners and losers? And then think about this, Will. All the people that get upset because government does something that maybe only members of Congress know about before it hits the public wires. And they say, wow, looks like the government, the president here, is going to buy a stake in Intel before that hits the streets. I'm going to go get me a position in Intel. Because you saw what happened. It went up by 10% after the government took a stake in it. And so the government also, again, is saying, hey, NVIDIA and AMD, pay us 15% of your sales, essentially a royalty, just for the privilege of selling in China. And then you've got, I think it's the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, is like taking an investment in one of the rare earth mineral producers as well. So we have a golden investment in this Nippon U.S. Steel transaction. Yeah, I disagree with that. And someone whom I watch on a regular basis, Larry Kudlow, comes on the Business Channel in the afternoon, a huge Trump supporter. Man, he even criticized this. He did.
Yeah.
That was on Friday. And Stephen Moore, he served in the Trump administration, a huge supporter of the president, as am I. But just found that this was a little out of their comfort zone. Stephen Moore worked in the Council of Economic Advisors in the Trump administration, Trump 45. So it is good, I think, to see that, as Ben from Madison points out, that we do have some conservatives that are making statements in opposition. Rand Paul, no surprise that he would be critical of this.
Yeah.
He says on his X account this morning, if socialism is government owning the means of production, wouldn't the government owning part of Intel be a step towards socialism? Terrible idea. And, of course, the concern always is, well, slippery slope. You know, today it's Intel, tomorrow it's your business that the government says, we're going to invest in you, but and you don't have a choice here whether or not you want to accept that. And by the way, this is everything we want in return for that investment. In my opinion, what should have happened is we should have canceled these stupid grants. I opposed this dumb bill from the day it was passed. Again, I see the wisdom in the president's action. If we're going to give you this money, Intel, just write you a check, stroke you a check out of the Treasury here, we need something in return. How about some stock? I get it. I really do. The bad bill is what caused this. We
yeah.
should have never passed that stupid legislation. And I ask again, every time I hear about all these grants and programs and so forth, where's the money coming from? We're borrowing 46 cents of every dollar outside of Social Security and Medicare. We don't have it. Stop federal grants. I know that's not something a lot of people want to hear because they rely on those, but it's dumb. We're borrowing money to give away to other people. In this case, it's Intel. And by the way, Intel doesn't have a capital problem. They didn't need a subsidy. They have an innovation problem. That's their problem. They don't need money. They need innovation. They missed the train. Management made some mistakes in missing out on the opportunities. Well, there's a book written, I can't remember the name of the book, by the original Intel CEO. I believe he was Hungarian. His name is Andy Grove. And when I first started in the industry, of course, Intel and the microprocessor made the microcomputer and everything else we all use today. It has its roots in the invention of the microprocessor. Andy Grove's book, unbelievable. I mean, he's a guy you want to emulate. They desperately need another Andy Grove is what they need, not money from the taxpayers. All right, we're stepping aside for a break with Kansas bumping us out here. Great tune. We got Brian Peet coming back after the break. Stay with us.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
Let's do this.
On Super Talk Mississippi.
Let's go.
Welcome back, everyone. It is middays. We are live from the Element Wealth Studio. Thanks for joining us on this Monday, kicking off a brand new week. We're pleased to welcome now Chief Brian Peet, a CIT International Board member, also the director of the Riley County Police Department. Hey, Chief Peet, good to see you, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much. It is an honor to be here. Really appreciate it. Love your show.
Oh, appreciate that. Appreciate that, Chief. So we wanted to get you on to talk about your resume is impressive. You've been heavily involved in just developing processes, procedures, even the use of technology to identify possible threats, right, of active shooting situations, and then to prevent the aftermath, PTA, right, I believe is the acronym you use for that. And I guess I really hadn't thought about that. I don't know that most people have, that often we have these situations and these horrific shootings, and then almost inevitably there's a possibility of more, right, happening after that. And we're looking for ways to prevent that. Talk about that, Chief.
Yes, sir. So we had a this is something, it's a best practice that's been out there for a few years now. And our group had really gotten into it after a few years ago. A good friend of mine who I had the honor to work with, Officer Tony Ferguson from the Alamogordo Police Department, was shot and killed in the line of duty in New Mexico. And one of the things that we again realize is that there are certain behavioral cues that people exhibit, people who are more prone to violence, that they exhibit. And the person who shot and killed Tony had a lot of these behavioral indicators. And from that point, we say no more. And we don't want to do this, because every time we have a tragic shooting, conversations revolve around weapons, Second Amendment rights. They revolve around mental health issues, a lot of myths on a lot of sides. And what our group wanted to do was look at what the existing best practices were and work within the confines, because we can find ways to prevent violence without overhauling laws to that effect.
So, Chief, it seems to me like that in our society in general, even though people are suspicious, they're so concerned, so hesitant, afraid, if you will, of repercussions, to just speak up, whether it's teachers or physicians or family members, neighbors, what have you. Is that the case, and how do we address that?
That is the case. Everybody holds a little bit of a piece to the puzzle. And so there are reporting systems. There's a lot of different things to do just to reach out. But it all starts with training and letting people know what's out there, what's available. And so if you see something online, if you hear someone talking, if you hear parents that have a concern and teachers hear that, they should report it to the police. They should report it through channels. But unfortunately, if you don't have the training in a community and people don't know what's available, I've been in jurisdictions where concerns were reported up to schools, and the schools did not share that information with the police because they thought it was a school disciplinary issue. And vice versa, when the police thought that it wasn't something the schools needed to know about, so they're going to run the investigation. But the best practice is you get everybody together in the same room. You get teachers, you get school administrators, you get business owners, you get prosecuting attorneys, you get law enforcement, everybody who has a stake in where this potential threat is going to be, and you share information. And from there, you develop a game plan, whether it's wraparound services for mental health and crisis mitigation, or you look at things like arrests. One of the other things that are out there when we think about active shooters is that roughly 60 to 70% of active shooter incidences are mainly domestic related. So It's also key that business owners and supervisors know exactly what's going on as well.
And Chief, it seems like every time one of these incidents occurs in the aftermath, we always hear folks say, well, I noticed this, that, and the other, and I was suspicious, but I just didn't want to speak up. Whether it's now everybody has a digital footprint, a social media footprint, and a lot of times they want to go out there, right? I mean, that's their brains kind of wired that way. They want the attention more than anything else, it appears. And I'm not trying to play psychiatrist here or psychologist whatsoever, but it just seems like every time, yeah, I saw this, and you're thinking, man, if you just would have spoke up, perhaps we could have prevented this.
Yeah, and we encourage folks, because at the very, very least, you're helping someone. You're bringing attention to an issue.
Yeah,
and whether it rises to the occasion that someone's really thinking about targeted violence or hurting someone else, or whether it's a cry for attention, whether it's a domestic related issue at home, whether it's children who need something, whether it's someone who's trying to get out of an abusive relationship, you're still helping each other. And I think that we all know that we have a duty to our communities, to our neighbors. And as long as I think if you do something with the intent to help and that there's no malice in your heart, you're fine. Personally, you're fine. But more often than not, when someone's in a crisis situation, they may be upset at that immediate time when they've been reported, like, say, for example, domestic violence. But then as those folks are coming out of the crisis they're in, they often reach back to the people who have called for help and thank them for it. So I get it in a lot of different places. Whether you're spiritual or not, you pray on it, you think about it, but ultimately you have to. We all have to do what's right, because I think the regrets of something big happening is a lot worse if you didn't call somebody and tell somebody something.
So you have a nonprofit that you've created that you serve as a champion for called Prevent the Aftermath, PTA. And you're working with private companies as well as some elected officials, right, to promote this and just to get the message out. And then you're doing some training as well. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. So our private or our nonprofit organization is called Prevent the Aftermath. Our website is www.preventtheaftermath.org. And we are reaching out to elected officials to talk about the best practices of what's out there, what the options are that are out there, and working for federal grants or looking through donations for private donations, that we can come in and we can train first responders on what to look for, but then we can also evolve that training moving out towards the private sector, to houses of worship, all other places that we can provide this type of training. It's 3 days, intensive. There's no other training out there in the world that's like it. But to add to what we're doing, there's also an assessment, a behavioral assessment that's also part of the best practice.
Okay.
And we've created an assessment tool. And thanks to our partners with CAAI, they're developing an AI component with this assessment tool that can help us ascertain different levels of concern. So, again, this is what we're doing. It's never been done before. And these are normally assets or different types of training that are involved or that are given to more of our federal agencies, but we need to bring it home to local law enforcement because this is where these things occur.
Yeah, no doubt. And from an elected official perspective, bipartisan, right? You're not just working. It's not just one party. It's both parties, major parties behind this. And then you've got lots of other subject matters that are helping you on this project. Subject matter experts, pardon me. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah, we've been reaching out to governors of both red and blue states, as well as senators and folks in Congress. And I think we've got really good traction on the support level for us. It's just an issue. I think the most, when you look at it from the political landscape, the most appealing thing to us is that we're working with systems that are already in place. And
okay.
Just like in crisis intervention, it's you use the resources available in your community.
Okay. Real quick, talk about how artificial intelligence and technology in general can also support this effort.
So through our partnership with C8AI, with the assessment tool, normally you need to have, every year the FBI comes out with an assessment as well as the National Threat Assessment Center with the U.S. Secret Service, and they'll look at past active shooter situations, they'll look at behavioral indicators and say, these are the types of behaviors to look out for. Now, there's no profile, if you will, of an individual who is looking at committing targeted violence. But through those behavioral indicators, you can determine whether this is somebody that should be higher up on your radar that you want to just envelop with resources, whether it's crisis, whether it's mental health, or whether it's arrest and moving forward with prosecutions. So what the AI component does is it takes all this information together and it allows for us to have this research information real time.
Got
so
it.
Rather than waiting 1-3 years to know what behavioral indicators are,
super fast,
we know instantly.
Makes sense. Chief Brian Peet with Prevent the Aftermath. He's the director of the Riley County Police Department with CIT International as a board member. Appreciate you coming on, Chief. Great discussion. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
You got it. We're coming right back, folks. Half an hour of Middays remains from the Element Wealth Studio.
Middays with Gerard Gibbert.
It is on
Super Talk Mississippi.
Whatever happened to a Saturday night? When you rest up sharp and you felt all right, it don't seem the same since Cosmic Light came into my life. I thought I was divine. I used to go for a ride with a chick to go and listen to the music on the radio. A saxophone was
Welcome back, everyone. You are tuned in to Middays, and we're coming at you live from the Element Wealth Studio. Fascinating interview there with Chief Brian Peet. Really appreciate him joining us. I've got a couple of friends, Will, who are currently in the process of developing some novel AI-powered technology for that purpose, to aid law enforcement. And that's one of the ways, is to try to prevent the aftermath and look for signs of some. It does seem like, right, every time one happens, there's a copycat or there's something that happens after it. It just exacerbates the problem, makes it worse. But more importantly, you think about all the situations that we have seen, these horrific serial mass killings, for example, the one I'm thinking about in Nashville. Remember at the private school there, I believe?
Yeah.
Didn't it turn out to be a transgender individual?
I believe it was.
Isn't that right? And a lot of people said, oh, yeah, I always thought something was weird and something like this would be possible. It's like, well, why don't you speak up? So we got to do better at that. And I think using technology, and I know there's a fine line. I get it, folks. There's a fine line between you're invading someone's privacy and you're doing something to prevent these incidents. But here's the thing. Most of that's just public information. You're the one that's putting all that stuff out there all over the internet and social media. So it's not like you're trying to, I don't want anybody to know about this. Well, then what the hell did you put on the internet for? Where everybody runs around with a device in their hand that can easily access it.
Yeah.
So it always amazes me people complain about their privacy on social media. I mean, what an odd thing that is to do. Man, so using technology to filter and scrub all that information and analyze it, and predictive analytics is that science, and using AI to power predictive analytics, if that saves lives, that's fine with me. If you don't want anybody to know about your personal stuff, don't stick it all over the internet.
We used to think Big Brother would come from the government, and it has to some degree, but a lot of it's our own social media.
Oh, there's no doubt. Absolutely true. So Ben from Madison, by the way, said, agree, I think canceling those grants would have been the proper way to go about things. Talking about the federal government taking a 10% stake in Intel. And again, I'll say it, I think it's a losing deal. I just think Intel, without a major change in management and direction and product strategy, they're giving way to AMD and NVIDIA, Micron, other chip manufacturers who've just leapfrogged them. There just was a hiccup along the way, honestly. So it happens. And, again, the president trying to take a stake in exchange for grants that we're providing, that certainly makes sense. But can you imagine if all of a sudden the federal government began to take some sort of ownership position, whether it's a public company or a private company? And every organization that receives some sort of federal grants and funding, that would affect our agricultural industry with the reference pricing programs and so forth, just as an example. There are numerous others. So what does Rand Paul and Chris McDaniel have in common? They both talk a good game but haven't accomplished anything, says Mose. Can we redraw Benny Thompson's district? Sure, absolutely can. But the blue states could redraw what Republican seats they have in them. That's what's happening here. It's a ping pong game, tennis match, back and forth, that really has no end game.
Maryland's the latest one.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. So who is it? Is it Tom Emmer from Maryland, I believe? It's one of the reps. It's part of the Freedom Caucus. I mean, he's heavily involved in conservative legislation and conservative issues. I think it's Tom Emmer. I could be wrong about that. You wouldn't think you'd see somebody that far to the right, that conservative, that is...
Andy Harris.
Andy Harris, that's right. That's right. Thank you for correcting me there. Thank you.
But they, correct me if I'm wrong, but Maryland tried this a while ago and got shut down by the Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken.
Seems like that's right. And that's the only point I'm making is the game, the way it plays out is the states redistrict, Somebody challenges. It goes to court. Depending on the judge, it keeps ascending its way through the courts, through the appeal systems, all the way up to the Supreme Court. And then they strike it down, say, go back to the drawing board. That just seems crazy to me. And I don't see that cycle ending. So, yeah. So, sure, we could redraw Benny Thompson's seat out. That'd make me happy, for sure. But then you got a state where you've got some 40% are Democrats that don't have a member in the House. Mm-hmm. Now, you could say, well, that's too bad. We own the legislature, and they're the ones responsible for drawing the district lines, and I appreciate that. And I certainly understand leveraging that position, leveraging that power. But then when the Democrats do it in the deep blue states, shouldn't we at least recognize that they're just doing what we did? And that's all I'm saying is this is a cat and mouse game that I don't think has a termination point. But I'd be happy, of course, to replace Benny Thompson. What I think is wrong is when the courts come back and say, you don't have enough black people in the district. That's totally wrong. I do not believe that congressional districts should be based on the racial composition. That's just wrong. That's totally wrong. And in Mississippi, we don't register by party, so you really can't tell, other than someone's historical voting record. But you don't register by party here, so if you try to draw lines on that basis. So inevitably what happens is the Justice Department says, you don't have enough black people in that district, right? That's what happens over and over again. Well, no, that's not the way our Constitution is designed. It doesn't say anything about you got to have a certain racial composition in a congressional or any district for that matter, even school districts. That's wrong, in my view. So we'll see what happens. But at this point, it looks like Texas is moving forward. I'm sure to get challenged. California's moving forward to counter what Texas is doing. It really doesn't matter a whole lot in the other states because they don't have enough seats. Florida, it does. New York, it does. Texas, California, Illinois. And then everything else kind of falls in behind that from a population perspective where you got a lot of seats. And it's fairly divided up. And I've made this point before, Will. In California, where they do register by party, there are more registered Republicans in California than people in Mississippi.
Wow.
Now, you wouldn't think about that. Yeah, they're 3.3 million registered Republicans. It's a state of 40 million. So it's still a fraction of the population. But it's more votes in California for a Republican than we have in the state of Mississippi. In total. So it's just a big dang state. Is it your opinion Trump would have the government take a position in Intel and let it fail? No, I don't think so whatsoever. I think that this administration feels very strongly that it's important for us to have a thriving semiconductor industry. I think COVID exposed that when we learned so much of our semiconductors come from the Pacific Rim. Taiwan is an example, and China's always saber-rattling about moving into Taiwan. I think this is a national security, and I get it. It's just a matter of whether or not the government should get involved in the private sector. And I think Intel is a company that's got problems. It doesn't matter if the government gives them grants. And all the president's saying is, hey, look, Intel, we're giving you this grant from this terrible CHIPS Act. And though I want to make this point, though I fully support Will rescinding those grants in the CHIPS Act, here's the problem. We got Republican control of the Senate. You'd have to get Democrats to peel off in the Senate to overcome the filibuster, just as Republicans joined Democrats in 2022 to overcome the filibuster to pass the CHIPS Act, including Mississippi Senator Roger Wicker, who joined in with Mitch McConnell and several others with Democrats to get that thing passed. And that's why they know that's virtually impossible. Now, I am pleased to see, just announced, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick. He's canceling a Biden administration agreement just today that would distribute billions of dollars for semiconductor research through a nonprofit. This is what pisses people off, Will, what I'm about to tell you. A nonprofit that is set up, created by, and staffed by former Biden political appointees. That's what makes people mad right there. I work in the administration a little bit. I feather my nest, right? I leave. I go find some stupid grant. And in this case, semiconductor research. They're no more doing semiconductor research than I am going to the moon. That's just ridiculous. $11 billion of semiconductor research in the CHIPS Act, and these guys landed $7.4 billion of the 11 in this stupid company. Hats off to Trump Secretary of Commerce Howard Lutnick. He says, we ain't doing that. He's voiding it. You know it'll get challenged. I get it, but I like the move anyhow. All right, folks, we're stepping aside for a break right here. It's middays. Don't forget, it's Ricky Matthews Outdoors. Super Talk Outdoors at 12:05.
Poly Up of Mississippi.
You're listening to Middays with Gerard here on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back, everyone. It's middays from the Element Well Studio. Are you thinking about or planning for retirement? Do you have a plan? Go to myelementwealth.com or call 601-957-6006 to let Element Wealth help you find your balance between income, growth, and guarantees. Don't forget, as always, the C Spire text line is wide open, 601-879-4395. Boy, the Sports Talk team has been all over the place, man. They are in demand. Sports Talk Mississippi is going to be in Senatobia this afternoon for Meet the Rangers Day at Northwest Community College. The Rangers 2025 football season will kick off soon with high expectations once again. Plus, you'll hear about all the incredible things happening at Northwest Community College. We're so blessed, Will, to have a fantastic community college environment here in the state of Mississippi. 16 community colleges across our state. They're all great. And I may be a little biased, I guess, but I'm going to say it's the best community college system in the country.
Absolutely.
In the country. Not only do they excel at athletics, but in academics as well, preparing our young folks for careers of the future. Always good experiences had by those that attend Northwest Community College. Certainly no exception there. So lots of controversy over the last few days about this redistricting, this gerrymandering, as it is referred to, in Texas. Now California says it will follow suit and counter Texas, who believes through their redistricting can add 5 seats for the GOP in the U.S. House. And then you got Illinois talking about chopping up that state again. My gosh, they're already chopped up. The Democrats have been doing this. The Republicans have been doing this. And it's just a tit-for-tat scenario. But right now, Republicans own the state legislatures where this the district drawing occurs, and that includes in Texas. So they're trying to take some advantage of that. And you can look at some of the deep blue states. Massachusetts, I think, is one, for example, that has Republicans in it, but they're underrepresented. Speaking of underrepresented communities, underserved communities, a favorite term of the left, well, that very perfectly applies to the representation from some of these deep blue states of conservative Republicans in those states that don't have any.
Yeah.
For the most part. So I get it. Now, I had an idea thinking about this, and I've said this many times on the program, that perhaps there's so much invested. I mean, financially, people cycles, courts, judges, you name it, legislatures, in consultants in this redistricting or districting. What that always tells to me, says to me, is that maybe we've conferred too much power to a House seat or control of the House or the Senate or even the White House in that respect. Maybe it's just too much power. When you look at the money being spent on some of these campaigns, $150 million for a Senate seat, that just tells me that that seat's just too valuable because it has too much power. I don't think that was the founder's vision. It was go away for a while and take care of the people's business and then get back to the farm. And in the meantime, your neighbors take care of your family. Man, have we ever drifted away from that or what? When you see these folks that have been in Congress 30, 40, 50 years, enriching themselves often and just continue to run. It just feels like there's too much power that's been vested in these congressional seats. It wasn't supposed to be like that. Maybe this is a suggestion I made on my social media. Maybe we ought to consider just using a random number generator. Just figure out the latitudinal and longitudinal boundaries and make sure that creates a district that has the appropriate number of constituents in it. What 720,000, I think, per House seat. That's the way our Constitution says it. We do a census, and then we divide that by 720,000 and say, okay, this is how many districts we're supposed to have. And that's figured out per state. That's why we lost one not so long ago, 20 years or so ago. So yeah. We went from 5 to 4. But maybe we just ought to say, hey, RNG, random number generator. That's the way lotteries work, by the way. Just randomly figure out where that ought to be and make sure it comes up with 720,000, and boom, here's your map. But what happens is people squawk and say, oh, they don't have enough this race in it or that race in it, or it moves around this person's house or that kind of stuff. Well, that's crazy. It's not supposed to be that way. Just make it so that it's just indifferent and doesn't matter. Just as a thought at this point. Now, I know current dynamics, the current dilemma would suggest the Republicans need to take advantage of their control in the red states and redistrict in their favor. I support that. But long term, this is just going to continue. And it's
that pendulum will swing the other way.
That's right. I don't think this is what the founders envisioned. I really don't. Sports Talk Mississippi, they're going to be in Oxford at the College Corner off Sisk Avenue in the Oxford Commons on Thursday. Get all your game day gear for the kickoff of the college football season, plus great deals throughout the store. Your home for all the Rebel gear is at College Corner in Oxford. We're stepping aside for Fox News Super Talk News. Coming right back.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.